colorblind administration. I mean a colorblind administration. Jay Parker was a founder of Young Americans for Freedom. A quarter of a century ago, in this, his native city, he was the state czar, I think to put it bluntly, of YRCR, YAF activity. He has spent his entire post-pubescent life, his entire adult life, as a conservative activist. You name a hat at one time or another, Jay Parker has worn it. He has, among other things, busied himself for the last decade in working very closely with the nascent political leaderships in black communities, tribal and nascent national communities in southern Africa, and he has made a principal focus of his interest the development of political liberty in that continent. He spends the greater part of his time in eleemosynary works in the Washington metropolitan area. He is the squire of Great Falls, Virginia. He is perhaps best known to this audience as the president of the Lincoln Institute for Educational Research and as the publisher and editor of the quarterly, The Lincoln Review. Ladies and gentlemen, Jay Parker.
Thank you very much, Joe. Thank you so much. 8 minutes is not a lot of time to race around Africa. Only Eric Brodin can do that in his Land Rover. Well, I thought that Eric Brodin would help me out today anyway, but I pulled out a piece of something he wrote a while ago just to give you a sketch of where we are in Africa at this point, and where he quoted from the Freedom House report. Remember, Eric? And Eric and I have traveled down in Central Southern Africa on occasion, and he's pointed out different things to me, so I'm terribly dependent upon Eric for a lot that I know about Central Southern Africa. But he said in the Freedom House report, the declines in freedom occurred in many countries in Africa as military leaders and factions increased both the severity and arbitrary quality of their rule. He specifically mentions Nigeria's military intervention became thoroughly entrenched by the end of the year. Former politicians, journalists, students were all particularly objects of attack. The report goes on to say that Sudan's attempt to impose particularly a harsh version of Islamic law and Ghana's move to gang rule and Kenya's consolidation of power, Liberia's killing of political opponents and students, all of these reflect moves away from freedom and toward further repression. Now, Eric goes on to comment that joining with these were anti-democratic developments in what he considered the three Z countries, Zimbabwe, Zaire, and Zambia, all revealing a trend toward great emphasis on one-party rule and subsequent repression of media and other freedoms. And Eric goes on to say that this has been particularly true of Zimbabwe, formerly known as Southern Rhodesia. It was part of the old Nyasaland Republic, where the fragile hopes for political democratic promise have been increasingly shattered. In black Africa only, goes on, only Guinea could show improvements, and that was from the bottom of the worst tyranny experienced on the continent. Now, Eric sums this up by saying that the countries north of the Sahara, however, could note substantial improvements, with Libya as the exception. The best record could be noted in the Arab Republic of Egypt, where political dissenters and religious representatives of the Coptic population have been released by President Mubarak, the latest being the Coptic Pope Sindoa III. Now, I like to just take my Land Rover and race down to Central Southern Africa and show you just a bit from my experience down there since the 60s, really late 60s, from the time when the crowd up at National Review got me involved in the Central Southern African Indian Ocean situation. Of course, we're bogged down in Indochina at that point, so we were not under any great pressure to really pay strong and intense attention to that area of the world. I finally was encouraged to go down there in 1972 by the late Max Juergen, who was a director of the American Conservative Union. He was one of the close personal friends of the people at National Review. But Max Juergen was probably the authority on African affairs in this country, especially in the area of Central Southern Africa. Now, when they sent me down in 1972, March of 72 to be precise, you can imagine what a youngster, young black kid from South Philadelphia, traveling down through Rio, then cross the South Atlantic into Johannesburg, John Smuts Airport, being met by a Foreign Service officer of the Department of Foreign Affairs of the South African government at that time, and driven up to Pretoria. Now, the interesting thing is, to give you some perspective on my background, is that the young fellow who met me at the airport in 1972 was none other than the current minister of the embassy in South Africa in Washington, D.C. at this point, Andre Killian. Andre Killian was a brand new Foreign Service officer who met me and drove me up to Pretoria. He had no idea who this black American was at this point, and he didn't know if I was a Mau Mau type or a Black Panther or whatever. He just was very polite. He booked me into then the Union Hotel in Pretoria, because there was no five-star hotel at that time. There was what we used to know in this country is Jim Crowism. There was a Union Hotel partially owned by Helen Sussman. I had to get special permission from the police to stay in that hotel at that time. Of course, today you have the Burgess Park Hotel, five-star hotel, where Eric has stayed many times, and many of you, I'm sure, Otto Scott has stayed there. And, you know, it's an entirely different situation throughout South Africa in that regard. But the fact of the matter is, these things have changed down there to the extent that without the United States policy being involved in these changes, a lot of these younger men have come along through the South African scene, political scene, without encouragement from the American government. Now, the mistakes that have taken place down there, how we have gotten ourselves in the rear guard action in Angola, by not supporting Zavimbi, in my judgment, at the very outset, by splitting our base between and Holden Roberto and Jonas Zavimbi at that time, back in the 70s, I think we made a mistake. I think because of our relationship with Zaire, with the individuals controlling that part of the country, we wanted to at least split our base between Holden Roberto and Jonas Zavimbi, and I think it was a mistake. And in hindsight, a lot of people agree with me at this point. I think had we encouraged the development of Renamo Group back when the Frelimo outfit was reigning as the opposition group to the Portuguese back in the early 70s, then we could have at least had some parity there in Mozambique. Fortunately, the Soviets have not put in sufficient amount of money that the Mozambicans are still dependent upon the South Africans. I think we have lucked out in areas like Zimbabwe, for instance, simply because when we encouraged the South Africans to pull the plug on Ian Smith, then, of course, our friends, Mugabe, Robert Mugabe up in Zimbabwe, and all the rest of those tyrants up there, have not been able to go their own way and totally can cut themselves off from trade-wise from South Africa. There will not be a connection in the foreseeable future. You can put the money into it. But let's look at the experience of the Trans-Am Railroad back in the 70s. When we didn't put the $40 million into the Trans-Am Railroad back then, the Chinese came in and built the railroad. But the fact of the matter is, without the Chinese overrunning Central Southern Africa, like a lot of people thought, the railroad has not worked properly, and also Lusaka, Zambia, depended upon their railroad to get its copper out through Dar es Salaam up in Tanzania. Well, Kenneth Kaunda, good friend, Julius Nyerere, then the president of Tanzania, quadrupled the rates at the port of Dar es Salaam on his own friend. So much for the solidarity that exists in Central Southern Africa. And I don't expect it to be any different if it goes out through Beira, through Mozambique, or if Jonas Zavimbi allows it to go out through Benguela, out to the Atlantic Ocean, through Angola at some point. But it's not going to happen because the freedom fighters are going to keep that interrupted. It's in their interest to keep it interrupted. But if we put the money into it, it's just going to be a lot of waste of money. Now, on the South African scene especially, many of you know, I used to represent Nelson Mandela's relatives in South Africa. And by that, before you get all upset, They used to be the people in the Republic of Transkei, George, Katie, Matanzima, and all the rest of them. In fact, it included Vinnie Mandela's dad and those people. The two major tribal groups within Transkei, the Tembus and the Pondos. You cannot have a government in Transkei unless you forge a coalition between those two factions. Now, that is only among the Xhosa-speaking people in the Transkei-Siskai area. Now, when you try and get the people of Zululand, Gachibulalezi's people, the Inkatha crowd, it just isn't going to happen. Those of you who have talked to Gachibulalezi, who have asked him frank questions, who have talked to Katie Matanzima, used to be president and prime minister of Transkei, who have talked to George Matanzima, any of the other people there, and they realize that there's no way you're going to get those two major factions to work together in the foreseeable future. So that is an issue we must deal with. It's a reality. Along that Indian Ocean coast, we're going to have to deal with that. A big mistake we made was not recognizing Transkei when they reclaimed their independence in 1976, October 26, 1976. Big mistake. We could have then consolidated Transkei with what is now Siskai. We probably could have acquired, the Transkeis could have acquired the East London area. At that time, a deep water port was available. The United States could have had a deep water port. Then, as you'll recall, shortly thereafter, we rented a base from the Brits, Diego Garcia. Now, of course, we use Mombasa, Kenya. So we have a presence along the eastern coast of Africa, but this was long coming. The mistakes have been made time and time and time again. I would just point out that Ian Smith made a major mistake in 1974 when he let Mugabe and Sotoli and all the rest of them out of jail in the fall of 1974. He should have consolidated his authority then. If he was about power, he should have consolidated his authority with people like Chief Chirau, who was the head of the most of the Mashona people up there at that time, in the tribal trust area, or people like Chief Ndewini, who had a strong base among the Matabele people down in the southern part, the Bulawayo area of Zimbabwe at that time. While these individuals were still in jail, if you're going to play this political game, this power game, he should have done this. And quite frankly, I told Ian Smith that he should have done that in August of 1974. So I sleep fairly well at night having said these things to these people. That, you know, when I talk to people like General Vandenberg, whose name was in the paper just recently, I guess New York Times or the Washington Post just a week or so ago, as an advocate for the conservative faction in South Africa. Now, I'm not so sure what that report means because it didn't really say a heck of a lot. But he was always one of the moderate factions as the head of the Bureau of State Security back then under John Foster, who was the Prime Minister of South Africa at that time. He then, of course, after Foster retired, he retired and went back to his farm in the Orange Free State. Now, he was a voice of moderation back then. He knew a lot of people. And I'm not sure if this report that says he is advocating a radical pro-right-wing position is correct or not. Now, I don't believe that he is on the radical fringe, the HNP. He is not on that side at all. But clearly, I believe that the situation in South Africa is moving toward a more moderate stage. But we have to free up these black independent states and recognize them, Transkei, Siskai, Venda, and Bophuthatswana. 50% of the free world's platinum is down there in the Bophuthatswana area, in Rustenburg. 50% of that belongs to the people in Bophuthatswana, President Mongopi's people, and particularly a chief right there in Poking Village. Now, that's a reality. There's no way that you're going to turn the country over to the ANC or turn it over to Gachibulalezi or Katie Matanza or anybody else and have the people in Bophuthatswana give that platinum up to any of those people. Doesn't work that way. Excuse me. That's not reality. And if you think the factional fights between the Zulus that you've been reading about represent something, then doggone it, you wait until you try and merge all of these groups together at this point. It just can't work that way. Thank you very much.